Today I want to talk about a concept that's not really unusual, but the words I use to describe it will be. It is Christine Qualigevity. Christine is the word that means Christ-like. And Qualigevity is a phrase that I've coined that is talking about not just longevity, but quality added to longevity. So, that word is a combination of a quality-filled life extending over a long period of time. Christine Qualigevity. I frequently talk about the framework of the 12 worlds, which is a way of looking at things that seems to make human activity more understandable, more manageable. I describe these 12 worlds as being the spheres of our activity, and that pretty much anything and everything that we do can be put into one or more of these worlds, with the idea being that if an activity impacts positively more than one world, you would think, wow, that's a really good investment of energy and time and effort. And these worlds are arranged in a way that makes them easier to remember, starting from the very top. If you can imagine the space above your head representing spiritual, then your head being mental, and then your smile on your face being emotional, and your face being physical, you've got the first four worlds. And then think in terms of family, career, financial, social, leisure, community, political, and maintenance. I will bet there's nothing that you ever do that doesn't fall into one or more of those 12 worlds. It occurs to me that we all want to be successful in whatever that means to us as individuals, but one of the key elements in there is to determine who is this me that wants to be successful. And if I'm clear about my identity and my points of view and my values and my beliefs that are very clear to me, then I know who I am. Not just what I've been told I am or how I am or this sort of thing, but how do I actually feel about this construct of me? My I-ness, my identity, my personhood. I'm a fan of Christ. I'm a fan of Christ consciousness. And I believe that we can aspire to that goal of Christ consciousness. I know I do. That's my aspiration. I aspire to Christ consciousness. The book that inspires me most is Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Before that, it was the Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ. But now, Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth is more appealing to me. One of the things I found so wonderful about it, right from the earliest reading, which started on October 14, 2010, when it was gifted to me in PDF form, was that it contained so much knowledge that was completely unknown to me. I took my spiritual understanding, if you will, or my mental understanding pretty seriously. I considered myself pretty well read in spiritual matters, and I was reading things that I had never considered before. I saw stuff in the words of that PDF that were so wonderful to read, I was thrilled with it, and I've been studying it ever since. Years ago, prior to my move from Manhattan, where I lived for about 11 and a half years, to San Diego, California, I was, I guess, given or I bought, I don't really remember exactly how I came into possession of the book, Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda. And as I was reading the book in Manhattan in my final days before moving, I thought, man, this is fantastic. I love this book. This is so great. Well, when I get to California, San Diego, the place I ended up renting to live was about 10 miles away from one of the two main temples that taught Yogananda's teachings. It was wonderful. It was in Encinitas, California, not far from where I lived in La Costa. I'm like, wow, this is so great. So Sundays, I would go to their services, and I was always touched about how effective the, I guess, monks or priests or whatever they were called were delivering their Sunday talks. I thought, this is great. And so the more I read about it, the more I read, the more interested I became. But it became to that point that I needed to make a decision whether to really commit to this line of self-development. And the way to do that was to accept Yogananda as my guru and to practice Kriya Yoga. And when it came down to it, I couldn't do it. I have, even as a young child, have always been fascinated by Christ. Christ is my guru. I wanted to be like Christ. I have no doubt that there are other Christed souls out there over the course of human history, and I don't doubt that Yogananda was one of them. But rather than follow in that particular direction, I wanted to follow Christ. And it wasn't until years later that, of course, 2010, that Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth came into my possession. Early on, and today, I realized I don't accept the Old Testament or the New Testaments as, quotes, the Word of God. One of the reasons is because man has so distorted the teachings in the Bible, so much so that the value of them has been degraded. It's been politicized, manipulated, translated, retranslated, re-retranslated for political purposes. And that was a problem. And if you add into it the reality that 2,500 years ago, 3,000 years ago, when this stuff started to be written, is the people that were writing it were dealing with life at a level of awareness that was essentially survival-oriented, superstition-oriented, fear-oriented, and they're trying to determine the cause of life and what's going on and the meaning of life and who and what is in control of life. And so the creation of this God that is punitive and favoritism-oriented and wrathful and judgmental and also loving is really basically the idea of a kingly man translated into magnitudes so much greater than a man. But there he is, a huge man thing with man-like attitudes was what God was seen. That didn't work for me. That didn't make any sense. And the idea that this stuff came to the writers, and nobody really knows who the writers are because there's some confusion about that, and what was included in the Bible and what was left out of the Bible. There's not much confusion as to whether that was done or not. It's exactly who was controlling it and who needed to make this religion, Christianity, a unifying force politically. That was the ruler of the known world back then. And, you know, Paul was marketing his view of who a person he never met was like. And he was a great marketer, but you know, whether it was all accurate, I doubt it. Seems to me that no one who is willing to think can possibly overlook all the glaring inconsistencies in the Old Testament as being anything other than a lot of superstition, a lot of desire for control and greed, using fear to manipulate and control the ignorant into being obedient. And if you're trying to build a society, it's like you're going to use whatever means you can do them in order to accomplish that goal. And fear and punishment, the need for obedience, was how they were doing it. And we're doing the same thing today, so there's no real difference in our human behaviors, how we're trying to get people to do what we want. So, from a spiritual standpoint, until someone can show me a better model of how to raise one's consciousness toward Christ's consciousness than the ways described in the book Christ Returns Reveal Startling Truth, I intend to use that book as my set of guidelines as I become a Christine Qualigevatist. Try saying that a few times. Qualigevatist. That's a Christine Jonathan Qualigevatist is a person who is practicing or delving into or seeking to understand the qualities of Christ that will help produce a long, quality-filled life. If I go to the second world, the mental world, it seems very clear to me, and probably to anybody else, and everybody else, that increasing our own awareness, which is another way of saying elevating our consciousness, and connecting to the source of our being, which I would describe as Christ consciousness and divine consciousness, rather, it makes sense that we would do this. If this power is really actively enlivening us, if our source of being is the thing that is in our bodies, mind, in our affairs, in the way we think, and if it's showing up in the world around us with plants and trees and animal life and all kinds of things growing and developing, doesn't it make sense that we would want a greater understanding of how that actually happens, how it can be made better, that is, how we can avoid interfering with it, and maybe how we make it worse, that is, how do we interfere with this natural flow of energy from the source of our being? How can we live in harmony with this creative, loving, intelligent power? That seems to me to be one of the goals, and in order to live a long, quality-filled life, I guess that has got to be a major part of it. Because our thinking is so important in human life, thinking, learning, processing information effectively, really, those things are essential to our own abilities to create in our lives, to create the conditions that we want for ourselves, our families, our friends, our communities, our businesses, and even strangers. And for us to be able to self-express the energy that is flowing into us and through us. We have to make decisions about that. And if we can make those kind of decisions more effectively, if we can process information more accurately in present time, grounded in whatever realities that we're using in order to build our lives, we're going to be happier. We know that it takes less awareness to destroy than it does to create. It takes less awareness to use force or lies on other people than giving respect and support to other people. We know that. But the only way to have creation and respect is to increase our own mental capacity to process information accurately. Now, some people would say that we're individuals, and that's the end of the story. We're individuals, and our job is to take care of ourselves as individuals, period. That's one point of view. Another point of view is we're all interconnected. the source of our being, that is, the source of your being, the source of my being, the source of our next-door neighbor's being, and the source of your next-door neighbor's being, is the same source. And if we go back, we go back, we go back, and we discover that we all came from the same source, it would say that we're related, we're interconnected. So we can't really make a determination that it's wisest for us to act as if we are all alone in the world. Makes more sense to me to perceive our relationship as like a cell in the body. A cell in the body, I'm looking at one of my fingertips, the cell in my fingertips is not disconnected from the rest of the cells in my body. The cells in the tips of my toes are not disconnected from all the rest of the cells in the body, and on and on and on. And if you look at humanity as an organism, every individual, person, being, is part of the whole. We're all interconnected. And to think that it doesn't matter what happens to somebody else on the other side of the planet or even on this side of the planet, to me seems to be myopic, real short-sighted, and will not serve us if we have any interest in Christine Qualigevity. The third world, I wanted to define my thinking from the point of view of Christine Qualigevity, was the emotional world. We humans have a huge range of emotions available to us. Even though we know this fact, yep, I got a lot of emotions. Emotions are still widely misunderstood and even feared by lots of people. To think of our emotions as divinely designed navigational aids could help us respect and use our emotions to our best advantage. But currently, people fear emotions, and rather than accept them as gauges or indicators of the directions of our thinking and acting as we travel in life in our vehicles, our vehicle of our mind, our body, our mindset, and our identity, instead of recognizing that they're gauges like, oh, okay, yep, going in the wrong direction, we use GPS, we use gas gauges, we use speedometers, odometers, we use all these gauges in a car as a vehicle, but yet we decline to use our emotions in the most important of all of our personal vehicles, our bodies. Too often people think of emotions, and we're taught this too, right? That emotions they're unruly. They're like a passenger in your vehicle, that those emotions, when you're not paying attention, are going to reach over, grab the steering wheel, and impulsively drive you into dangerous situations. So whatever you do, control your emotions. Interesting studies that indicate people that do terrible, terrible things to other human beings very frequently are people who, up to the point where they're caught for their crimes, oh, he was such a sweet person. Oh, he was just a lovely person. He never showed any of those kind of emotions. He never came to terms with his emotions until they exploded into heinous behaviors. Like, it's not the emotions, it's how we relate to them. We can fear this rebellious spirit, and frankly, it's even demonized by others that would control us. They would say, I want to control you, so don't notice your emotions, you know, just ignore them, you know, because those emotions, they're the devils of disobedience, which is another way of saying if you recognize your own emotions, you're liable to not go along with everything that I'm promoting to you. So don't show emotions. Don't show emotions. No. And don't feel your emotions. I believe this to be true. Emotions don't make us do things. Emotions indicate whether the things our ego drives and our consciousness lead us to do are in harmony or out of harmony. So it's not anger that's the problem. It's how we're processing information. And we're going in a different direction where we think fighting or harming somebody or running away or not dealing with something makes more sense. A very important topic to me is the idea of mindset. Mindset, one word. It almost appears like our mindset is the dial on a television or a radio. You know, we can adjust it, turn that dial, or flip the channel. And it determines the emotional station. Let me say it differently. It determines the emotional state we are tuned into in every single situation, in every energy exchange experience that we think about having, or that we have had in the past, or that we are having right now. It filters out energy patterns not like those that we previously accepted as being true and legitimate and relevant, and it will filter in energies that are similar to those that we previously accepted. This is true about me. Oh, this is true about life. Oh, this is true about people. And we'll let those things in because we consider them to be valid. They'll get through the gate. They'll get through the filter because we've allowed them in the past. We were taught that they were true. Whether they were or not is a different story. So this mental-emotional construct of a mindset is essential to human life. Got to have it, because it's part of us as individuals. I'm sitting in a chair. You know what? I know where I am, and I know where the chair is. We're not the same. We're different. We're individualized energy. The chair is different than me, and I'm different than the chair. And I'm different than the computer that I'm looking at. I'm different than the microphone I'm speaking into. Ditto with you. All these things are necessary to us. And the mindset is how we create this view of ourselves. It's essential. But it's essential that we upgrade it constantly. We need to keep developing. Because the mindset that we had at 1 year old and 2 year old and 3 year old and 4 year old and 10 year old and 12 years old and 20 years old and 30, we need to be upgrading it, you know. Consider it like software. Version 1, version 2, version 3, or if you need to, version 1.1, 1.2, 1.3, and then finally a whole new version. This is what we do with ourselves and our mindsets as we go through life. And if we're not willing to do that, if we don't understand the need to do that, we're like at version 1.1. It's like, wow, 2016? You're still operating in life with programs that are version 1.1? That might explain some things that are not that effective going on in your life. So this constant upgrading, constant development, this constant refinement of our emotional, mental mindset is really the only way to experience meaningful, successful, healthy human life, because it really represents growth. If we're not growing, and if we're not being nurtured and nurturing, if we're not healing and repairing, if we're not being protected by our awareness, our consciousness, and helping to protect others, fulfilling our needs and helping others to fulfill their needs and working at this, we're not playing the game. We're not playing the game of life. The next world is the physical world. Human beings are five sense oriented. We can be convinced that the facial wrinkles that we see in the mirror are causing our unhappiness. Happens all the time. And we can be convinced that an injection of Botox, which is a neurotoxin, put into the face that will temporarily paralyze the facial muscles and nerves, will help us to achieve happiness. Let me be clear. A neurotoxin is a substance that is poisonous to the nerves. Imagine this admission. I'll put it in these words. I am unhappy and I need more poison injected from a needle into my face in order to be happy. That's amazing, isn't it? Isn't it? And it's happening all over America. And maybe even the world at this point, since we lead people down that path. This human tendency, though, is not just about Botox. It's about food. If I just have more food, I will be happy. Or if I just have more alcohol, if I just have more drugs, prescription and recreational, if I just have more surgery, if I just have cosmetic surgery, if I just have more material possessions, cars, stuff, homes, money, status, power, control, I will be happy. We think that if we change the physical, we will change our spirit, our minds, and our emotions. The truth is just the reverse. If we change our spiritual alignment, our thinking, and our emotion, the physical will change. Before I continue with my opinions of how Christine Qualigevity aligns with the remaining worlds, let me offer this idea. A person doesn't have to be a Christian or an ex-Christian to appreciate the attributes of Christ, Christ consciousness, and the existence of other Christed souls throughout human history. For the Christians who have been told and who accept that Jesus was the only Son of God, that God could only create one Son, and he could only do that 2,000 plus years ago, and he could only communicate to humankind through two books, the Old Testament and the New Testament. Even though there's ample evidence that there's been plenty of human shenanigans in those books, the idea that God has and does communicate with other humans is perhaps the scariest, most heretical, most blasphemous points of view imaginable. For others, Christians and non-Christians, who have dared to think for themselves, the inconsistencies in religious dogma and the misuse of that dogma has led to a desire, and this is, I'm speaking for myself, to know a better truth than the truth parroted in Sunday schools and catechism in churches, temples, mosques around the world. And I am one of those seekers. Yesterday, a friend shared her book, Astrology for the Soul, by Jan Spiller, S-P-I-L-L-E-R. Jan Spiller thinks that the north and south nodes in astrology are the most significant aspects to study to determine a person's purpose and potential and challenges in life. So last night I started reading the part of the book that pertains to me. It said that people like me, and based upon my time of birth, in the North Node scenario, I am a Gemini in the North Node in the third house. She said, we have been seeking, in quotes, the truth for many lifetimes, and we're doing it in this lifetime, too. That feels accurate to me, and I think of the 900-plus books that I have on my bookshelves as Exhibit A, that, yep, I'm still looking for the ultimate truth. Is there such a thing? I do not know, but that I'm looking for it, I do know. At this point in my life, I've accepted a lot of truths, and I've rejected a lot of other widely accepted truths. The first one started when I was 6 years old. I frequently mentioned this. My first day of catechism, which is Catholic kids' indoctrination and brainwashing, where I heard that my three best friends were going to hell because they weren't Roman Catholic. Two Protestants and a Jew were going to hell because they were not Catholic. And I went home crying, and my mother questioned me about my tears. I explained. She told me that was complete nonsense. Here I am, 6 years old, first day of catechism, and people talking about God, a lay person. That woman doesn't know what she's talking about. I trusted my mother a lot more than I trusted this person who I met for the very first time that day. People talk about God and don't know what they're talking about. Is there any evidence in human history that that might be true? There's plenty of evidence that that is true. So, you go, From that point on, people say, it's raining outside. I go, hold on a second, let me look out the window, or let me go outside, and yep. I tended to be not that trusting of people. Maybe it started earlier. In my search for the truth, I knew I was going to get handed a lot of untruth along the way, starting at least at that early age of six. I think maybe the whole point of this, you know, that you reject certain things. Let me tell you the truth. The world is flat. You know what? I'm not going to accept that truth. Thank you. And maybe that's the whole point of searching for the truth, that individually each one of us is on this journey, that we're seeking our truth. What do we believe to be true? Can we validate it as compared to, I just accepted hook, line, and sinker, all the stuff that I was told. Now I don't have to bother searching for truth. I think maybe the adventure of life is searching for truth. I mean, where are we going? Aren't we trying to grow our awareness? Aren't we seeking greater understanding? Isn't it exciting to know this stuff? Well, for some of us, maybe it is. But it seems pretty clear that not everything that glitters with promotion, this is the latest and the greatest, not everything like that is gold. Because we know this fool's gold. Look, this is gold. No, that's not really. That's pyrite. Oh. And scams have convinced people for years, this is the latest and the greatest. And it turns into a black hole that consumes their money or their lives. Some of what I believe are my truths. Are they everybody's truths? I don't know. I can't be in control of that. But as a Christine Qualigevitist, I think how we think about things is causative. Now, I'm not the first one to have that thought, right? I learned that. I believe that. I've proven it. I've tested it. I've experimented with it. I believe that. It's true for me. How we think about things is causative. How we feel about things is causative. How we talk about things is causative. The how and the why and the what we do about things is causative. We are at cause, and when we think we're at effect, it is due to our thinking and feeling and speaking and acting in such a way as to cause ourselves to be at effect. We put ourselves in that position. To me, these truths show up very clearly on our physical world with our bodies, demonstrating our consciousness to us and to other people. What we believe about our own physicality will be created. A person who believes they're good-looking or pretty will take different actions. They will treat their bodies differently than somebody who believes they're ugly. So, which came first? Were they ugly and they're just demonstrating it, or did somebody convince them that they were? And then all hell broke loose. I believe it was the energy of the thought and the feeling that preceded the physicality. What we believe about our physicality will be created. Our beliefs are creative. They are causative. Years and years ago, this concept was considered, that's business 101. And this was it. Find the need and fill it. That's how businesses were started. That's the inspiration. And that's how businesses grew. They found a need and then they filled it. And they got really good at it and they prospered. Today, though, a different concept is prevalent. Create a need and fill it. Challenge with this, though, is the illnesses newly created by the marketing departments in meetings and pharmaceutical companies are excellent examples of this practice, right? They said, we got to create a need. We've got to create a need. We've got a drug up on the shelf that we're not selling enough of. Let's create a problem. Let's create a disease or an illness. And they arrive at social anxiety disorder or this disorder or that disorder, and they're off to the races. Then they start marketing through waves and waves of fear. If you don't get this, if you don't get this, there's a problem. And children, even at very young ages, are taught that their bodies are somehow deficient and not the way they should be. Adults experience the same thing through the bombardment of images to convince us that the way we are is not the way we should be. Two magazines come to our house which we never subscribe to. One of them is Vanity Fair, and the other is a local magazine, a glossy, called Bella, B-E-L-L-A. I usually recycle Vanity Fair without even opening it, like poop right into the recycle bin. But the other day, I decided to look through it. The vanity was unbelievable. And I think the fair is not fair as an equal or just, but fair as an exhibition. It was an unbelievable exhibition of vanity. The title did not lie. It was all about vanity. And for me, it was difficult to imagine that these ads could appeal to anyone. But they must appeal to somebody, because somebody created them, and somebody bought them, and somebody put them in the magazine. But the only people that could possibly relate to those things would be people completely under the control of their ego's vanity. Oh, this is the latest? I gotta have it. This is the greatest? I gotta have it. And it was unbelievable. I got done thumbing through that in about 7 or 8 minutes, and that magazine went into the recycle bin. Bella is the Naples magazine. Ostensibly, it's about publicizing the beautiful and wonderful women of Southwest Florida. Usually, they're on the cover, all dolled up, and they did this wonderful thing for charity and the wonderful thing for... I don't minimize that, but it seems to me that that magazine is kind of like sugar that we have added to medicines to make something that's distasteful to be palatable. And the magazine is loaded with ads for cosmetic surgery that will make you perfect, that will give you perfect breasts, perfect lips, perfect eyebrows, perfect waistlines, perfect buttocks, and perfect other things. There are so many ads of mostly men and a few women promising that they are the best mechanics to change your body into the work of art you always wanted it to be. This message: compare yourself to these photo retouched models and you can see that you are not beautiful enough. And I can remake you into what you should be. And oh yes, and after that, you can be happy being you. Yikes, what a message. And then we wonder why young girls have anorexia. You know, they're 90 pounds and they think they're fat. How did this happen? This marketing, right? here are the reasons you should hate your body and yourself, dot, 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 and this is what I can sell you to change that hate into love. That message cripples men and women with fears and doubts. The truth for me, as a Christine Qualigevatist, is all about our relationships with our body. And this is what I think we need to work at. Loving our bodies, accepting our bodies, caring for our bodies, and using our thinking, feeling, speaking about our bodies and our actions regarding it to be growthful, nurturing and nourishing, healing, repairing, protective. And when a need of our bodies becomes obvious, act to fulfill it. We have to be willing to live in our bodies for a long, quality-filled life. I think people die when they get to the point where they decide they don't want to be in their bodies anymore because they have found their bodies to be a hopeless vehicle to get them to where they want to go. When they run out of hope, they run out of life. Hating our bodies will not work. Accepting and caring for the bodies is the way to have a quality-filled life. We've got to stay in the vehicle long enough to grow our awareness toward this ideal of Christ or Christine awareness or Christ consciousness. I think it's possible. I'm interested in that journey. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized and modified version of the prayer from Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth, Letter 8. I have added Marianne's name to it because, to me, she epitomizes love. And it is that loving energy has made a huge difference in my life, and it will continue to do the same thing. Father, Mother, Life, Marianne, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves, our lives, our family, and our friends into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.